You're listening to The Naked Scientists with Chris Smith and me, Helen Scales. And sticking with the subject of babies, we're taking a look at the science of fertility this week. On the way, we'll find out how a new temperature monitor conceived in Cambridge can help women to tell when they're ovulating. And we'll take a look at some of the causes of infertility as well, and what science and medicine can now do to help us with the problem. And if you'd like to contact us through Twitter, it's at Naked Scientists, or you can send us an email to chris@thenakedscientist.com.
Thank you, Helen. Now, most people have probably heard the claim that body temperature changes when women ovulate. But can this actually be used as an effective fertility aid? Well, there are a couple of scientists who are in Cambridge. They're doctors Oriane Chauziot and Seamus Hashir, and they're from a relatively new Cambridge-based startup company. It's called Cambridge Temperature Concepts, and they say that temperature can be used to do that, and they've come up with a new way to measure it. Welcome to both of you. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Hi,
hello. So, Oriane, let's talk to you first. If you could just tell us, what's the situation with temperature and the menstrual cycle? How does it change?
So early in the cycle, a woman's temperature would be quite low, but just after ovulation, her body will release a hormone that's called progesterone, and that hormone has an effect on body temperature. It makes it rise, and that's that rise of temperature that we are detecting with our fertility monitor.
Why do you think that the temperature changes in this way anyway? What's the benefit of that actually happening? Why should these hormones have those effects? Do we know?
Well, they have an effect on the blood vessels that are located near the skin, and that is the reason why temperature changes. Now, I don't know if there is a benefit to it or not, but that's the situation.
Is that why when women are pregnant, they tend to get a glow? They get this sort of chloasma is the name, isn't it? And they tend to get a sort of glowing face, and also the neck tends to be more red. And I've heard that this is because of enhanced blood flow.
Mm-hmm. That's quite possible indeed.
So when you say temperature is low or temperature is high, how high and how low are we talking?
The difference between low and high can be as little as 0.3 of a degree.
Degree C?
Yeah, degree C. And can be as high as 1.5, depending on the woman.
And so just talk us through the menstrual cycle then, and what's happening at various points, and how you would go about using that to predict, on the basis of temperature, what stage of a cycle a woman's at.
So if we take a textbook cycle, which is 28 days, obviously isn't the case for most people, but let's stick with that for now. The first 14 days is when the temperature is low, and that's when the body is getting some follicles ready.
This is in the ovaries where you're maturing future eggs.
Yes, that's the case. And then one of the follicles will be ready to release an egg, and that's the time of ovulation. Just after ovulation occurs, the body will start secreting progesterone for the following 14 days, and that will allow the body to get ready for potentially a fertilized egg to implant, and that would be the start of a pregnancy. Now, if pregnancy doesn't occur, temperature will go low again because progesterone will drop at the time of the period.
And so your proposal is that if you measure body temperature very accurately, you could potentially predict when that ovulation is.
Yeah.
Why is it helpful to know that?
So the highest chance to get pregnant for a couple are the days around ovulation. Most couples don't know when that happens, and so allowing them to have that information increases their chance of conception by about 3 times. So that's why we found that it was very useful to provide them with that information.
Now, you've used what you called a very artificial menstrual cycle, 28 days. You said most people aren't. I mean, most women are a little bit longer than that, aren't they? But what about many women who have irregular periods?
Mm-hmm.
Does the temperature situation work there?
It would. You have some information that you can use, some patterns that are specific that happens just before ovulation. You sometimes have a little dip of temperature just beforehand, but it's quite specific woman to woman. So the monitor that we've designed, the dual fertility monitor, will actually learn from the temperature patterns from a specific woman and use that cycle after cycle to help her find out when she's most fertile.
So basically what you're doing is you're building up a profile of that person's temperature and how it probably relates to their fertile window.
That's correct.
So that by the machine learning, you learn from experience and you can then begin to give information to that person about when it's probably a good time.
That's completely correct. The other advantage we have is the device connects to the internet. So the data of one cycle can be compared to the one of all the other users that are using the product, which increased the accuracy by a lot.
Wow. So you can actually sum data from a very big population of users to extract trends. So actually this is not just a sort of personal tool for the users, it's actually a research tool as well in that respect.
Yeah, completely.
So the company is learning.
We are.
How many people are taking part? Seems like a good time to ask Seamus. Is you actually the guy who... You did a lot of the engineering on this.
I'm the inventor of the little sensor that collects all the data. To answer your question, we did a trial throughout the EU of about 100 couples between December and May of this year. That gave us our sort of initial database of ovulation cycles to look at. And there's several hundred units in the field right now collecting data and calling back home and depositing that data with us.
What do people say? How do people react to the fact that you're basically logging their menstrual cycles? I mean, obviously it's an interesting thing and they can probably see the benefit for others, but do people feel a bit tetchy about the fact that their own personal body rhythms are being beamed off over the internet to your company?
To be honest, we haven't had a single person be concerned about it, because one of the key benefits is that that data can be flagged up if there's anything unusual going on, and our in-house fertility experts can look at that data and then come back to them with a question, say, were you ill last Tuesday? Or if not, then, this has affected your cycle in this way. Perhaps you could talk to your doctor about this or that feature.
That's interesting. So if they get swine flu, which many people probably are, you're probably going to record that as well, aren't you?
Well, we haven't built algorithms to detect swine flu due to a dearth of data in our database for swine flu. But in the event that we have thousands of people call in saying that that's what they got, then in theory we could develop ourselves a swine flu detector on the back of it.
If someone does have a fever-related illness, anything that causes their temperature to go up, that presumably is going to mask an effect that you would be able to see that month, isn't it?
It changes the temperature, but it changes it in a very different way than ovulation does. When you get a fever, the change tends to be very rapid and very much greater than the change due to menstruation. And, of course, it doesn't happen around the same time as any of the other indicators that we're looking for, suggesting that ovulation might, unless you're incredibly unlucky and you get a fever on the day of ovulation. So it's usually very easy to spot the difference between sort of some other source of temperature change.
So there's basically a thermal fingerprint or a thermal profile that goes with ovulation, and you can dissect that out of the other background thermal data that you're recovering, so you can still be relatively accurate no matter what.
That is essentially the heart of the algorithms that we run, yeah.
Now look, this is the first time today I've seen your unit, and I have to say this is amazing. I'll just describe this for the people at home. If you imagine a mouse that you'd operate your computer with, it's about palm size, and there's two colours, pink and blue. I presume that they don't actually discriminate between the sexes.
Well, we've actually found that people seem to prefer, actually, the non-gender-specific colours of white, lavender and green.
But this is accompanied by a tiny thing, which looks like a bit like a miniature bath plug, but it would be about a half the size of a bath plug. What actually is this?
It's about 25 millimetres wide and 5 millimetres thick. It's the sensor itself. Now, that's worn under the arm and worn with an adhesive to keep it there continuously. What that device does is it measures temperature very, very precisely. It's actually got two temperature sensors inside across a known thermal barrier. What that allows us to do is measure not only temperature but heat flow. So if you're under the blankets in bed, and it's worn on your skin surface, that will be a different heat flow than if the blankets weren't there. The amount of heat leaving your body would be different. That allows us to measure the core temperature very well while you're sleeping. It also contains a movement detector so that we can tell when you're sleeping compared to when you're awake.
Presumably the accuracy and the precision of measurement during sleep is much less variable, and therefore, well, the temperature is less variable, therefore your measurements are more accurate.
And the physiological thing that you're trying to measure is the deep sleep temperature. So what we're doing is automatically detecting when you're asleep, when your body's in a sort of good thermal environment, and then making corrections for all of the external changes that could be going on so that we can get a good handle on what's going on internally.
And how does the tiny sensor tell the mouse size base station, which is presumably the thing that then collects all the data.
Yeah.
How do the two talk to each other?
What you've got is the device has a single button and a little track wheel, sort of like a lot of consumer electronics devices and iPods and things have today. What you do is you simply turn the device on by holding down your middle button, hold that down, and it will then start looking for the sensor. You bring it close to the device, and it reads out
so it's a radio link
the data. It's a wireless radio link, and so it doesn't emit any radio while it's being worn. The radio link's actually from the little handheld reader to the sensor. What that does is it downloads all of that data and performs statistical analysis on it in the background.
So how do I then see that data?
So after it's finished reading out, it will give you a display indicating your fertile days for the prediction in advance. So it has one indicator that says that what today's level is, and the brightness of each day segment tells you how likely you are to conceive. Now, that takes into account both the male factors for the couple, which may change the likelihood of conception before ovulation, and female factors, which may change the likelihood of conception after ovulation.
And how does the data get to you? Because obviously this is not a computer, this is a handheld device. So how does it connect to the internet to tell you about the temperature profile?
Yeah, so on the side of the device, you'll spot a small USB connection, like you have for cameras and things like that. You plug that into your PC, and then it looks to the world like a flash disk, like one of those little USB thumb drives. That contains some PC software that you can run, which will show you a historical display of all of your data, and your future prediction for up to 6 days in advance, which is what the monitor displays as well. Most importantly, it will then connect to our servers over the web, transfer that data, and allow us to perform a correlation between your data and, as we say, all of the other women using the system. So we find those women with similar cycle patterns to yours. If you have a very stable cycle, there'll be a group of women there that share very stable, similar cycles to you. If you have a condition like, say, polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is about one-third of women who have infertility difficulties or very irregular cycles, it'll find other women with similar hormonal responses to ovulation, so the size of that temperature change and cycle length variability. And it'll bundle up those people that are similar to you and use that information to improve the predictions on the reader for you in particular.
Thank you, Seamus. And just quickly, Oriane, this has obviously been on the market now for a little while. What does the data look like? Is it successful? Is it working?
The data is quite successful so far. Early on, especially during the trial, we had a couple with great infertility problems, and we have been able to help quite a few of them to increase their understanding of their cycle, and a few of them managed to get pregnant as well in a short period of time, so we were very pleased with that.
Thank you very much to both of you. They're with us if you'd like to ask them any questions. The email address for us, chris@thenakedscientists, and we are, of course, also on Twitter, @nakedscientists, if you'd like to join in on Twitter.
Lifting the lab coat on the world's best science. The Naked Scientists.